Whether you believe him or not, my dad will happily tell you that musical talent runs in the family. And I would say that it starts with him. Dad has always enjoyed singing, playing piano, and all sorts of interesting instruments, including a couple of nose whistles. One Christmas, my siblings and I all received homemade humstrums. Yes, my dad finds joy in making all kinds of blessed noise. I called him up the other day to ask him about his appreciation for music. Uncharacteristically, he enthusiastically engaged in the conversation. His love of music, he said, began with his mom. And for a moment, this took my breath away. I had a unique and strong connection with my paternal grandmother. I remember her fondly in so many ways, but not as a musician. So my dad's story was fascinating to me. He said that his mom was a talented singer. At church, he would melt into the comfort of his mother's song. She would sing quite often at home, too, and they had a piano. Grandma could play anything she wanted, but he said she couldn't read a single sheet of music. She had this unique ability to just pick up songs by ear. With the will to play them, she sat down, plunked around, and just worked it out. My dad learned how to tinker with music by watching his mom. She modeled the art of expression without concern for perfection. I have myself created courageously. My work with compassion is my greatest example. In 2017, a few months after my mom passed away, I decided that I would commit myself to the cultivation of compassion in my community. I began looking for the established figures who could greenlight my proposals and shepherd me through the process. But no one would help me. Finally, I had arranged to get coffee with someone who I felt was my last possible option. Leah, I wish you had caught me 3 months earlier, he said. I love your proposals, but I'm not able to help you at this time. My heart dropped into my stomach. We wrapped up our conversation with pleasantries, and we went our separate ways. As I pushed open the door to leave that coffee shop, I heard a voice within say, "You don't need anyone's permission." Ah, I finally understood. I had wanted to jam with the professionals, but clearly this was going to need to be a solo act. I started tinkering, and 4 months later, I was presenting my first workshops. There was no sheet music for this. I literally was playing by ear. I knew I wouldn't get it right the first time, but I decided to focus on expression without concern for perfection. This would become my blessed noise. What noise does the world need you to make?
Thank you so much, Leah, for your insights and your thoughtful reflection. And also, what a joy it was to have Kelly as a special guest during our Time for All Ages earlier in the service. Like I mentioned before, Kelly is a high school band teacher, band and music teacher, who works in New York City, specifically in the Bronx. And I know that you'll all agree with me when I say teachers deserve our deepest admiration and gratitude, especially with all that they've had to go through during this past year. And teaching music during the pandemic, well, that's something that I have particularly had a hard time wrapping my head around. Kelly has shared with me some of her struggles teaching band and music in a fully remote high school setting. From trying to schedule private lessons for every single student over Zoom, to traveling to a student's house when their instrument breaks and fixing it for them outside on their sidewalk, to spending hours upon hours splicing together individual videos of students playing the same song, all so that they can hear themselves playing together in a final product. Much like we see Steve so lovingly do with our fellowship choir. Add on top of that, the fact that all of Kelly's students have varying levels of experience playing their instruments and varying levels of investment in band class. And many students, like their teachers, have been feeling completely overwhelmed and burnt out. You can imagine that giving grades for a remote band class is just an impossible task. And I've been really impressed with Kelly's approach. She shared with me that she bases a lot of her grading these days on whether students are just showing her that they're picking up their instrument and playing it, making some kind of noise on it, not letting the instrument gather dust in the corner. They could be playing scales, it could be a song, it could be whatever. Just show me you are playing, she tells them. That is what's important. Just show me you are playing. That is what is important. Her words remind me of the video that we saw earlier in the service from music educator and five-time Grammy winner, Victor Wooten. We heard him say that learning music should mean that we're playing more than we're practicing, just like how we learn a language. Play now, and the practice will come. The most important part is picking up an instrument and making some blessed noise, to borrow Leah's words from her reflection. But there is something about music that can just feel so intimidating to many of us who are not learned musicians or music educators. Those of us who may have internalized a notion that we just don't have a gift for music. I think that intimidation has a lot to do with this piece about making noise. You see, making noise, well, that implies that we think we have something to say. Hey, listen to me, I'm here. I'm showing up to do this thing and I've got something to offer. That kind of declaration can be terrifying. When I was in high school, I played the tuba. I was the only tuba player in the whole school. And when you're the only tuba player, you get pulled into everything. I was in band. I was also asked to play with the school orchestra, with the jazz band, with the brass ensemble, and the pit crew for the school musical. You see, every ensemble needs a tuba. You need that bass in order to hold things together. So when my assistant band director invited me to compete at the local Teen Arts Festival with a select group of brass players. Well, I assumed that I wasn't chosen because she thought I was any good. I assumed I was chosen because they just needed a tuba. And so we get to the competition, and I was so nervous. Our ensemble was pretty small, and the pieces we played had a lot of tuba, so there was no way that I was going to be able to hide my sound like I sometimes did in band. I was so worried that I was going to mess up, you know, like play a wrong note, lose my place, or even just not get a good sound out of my instrument. I was worried that I would embarrass myself, ruin things for my ensemble. I was worried that people would ask, well, why is she here? How did she get chosen for this? I remember standing backstage with my group. We were wearing our black on black concert attire, waiting for our turn to play. And now our assistant band director, she knew me very well. She knew that I was nervous. She knew I didn't think I was supposed to be there. She knew that I didn't have very much confidence in my musical abilities. She saw me peeking around the curtain at the group of judges, four judges. I was looking at them with such fear and intimidation. "Don't worry," she said. "You'll be fine. None of the judges are even tuba players. They're not going to notice if you make a mistake." Well, her words were a little bit comforting, but I just kept staring at those judges, especially one of them. "Okay, but who's that guy there on the right?" I asked. "He looks so familiar." And she smoothly replied, "Oh, him? I think he plays percussion. I'm not sure." After that, we went on stage. And honestly, I don't remember much about the actual performance, which probably means it went well. We didn't win the competition, but I don't think we were very disappointed with our scores. What I do remember is that later in the day, my assistant band director confessed to me that she had told a lie. That judge that I recognized had been Dorian Perriott Sr., and he was not a percussionist. The reason he looked familiar to me was because he was the father of my tuba teacher, and he himself was a tuba legend. He had traveled all over the world playing tuba with jazz groups, pit orchestras, and recording artists. She had lied to me because she knew playing in front of someone of such caliber would make me feel even more intimidated. She didn't want my nerves to psych me out when she was confident that I could play better than I thought I could. And then she told me that she'd been right. It can be so scary to put ourselves out there like that, especially with people who we are certain would do the thing that we are doing way better than we can. But what if we all tried on Victor Wooten's philosophy of music education? And what if we tried it on not just for music, but for our lives? One, play more than practice. Just do it and enjoy it. Two, allow ourselves to make mistakes. 3. Give ourselves opportunities to jam with the professionals. I'll add that I also love the addition that Leah made during her reflection. Don't fear a solo when it's called for. To me, all of this sounds like a helpful guideline for learning how to show up. And if you follow Brené Brown, the popular shame and vulnerability researcher, you know that she names showing up as the first step to courage. Courage, she says, starts with showing up and letting ourselves be seen. Making music while also holding the vulnerability of knowing that you might not be a maestro, that builds courage. The same goes for any time we show up to do anything when we don't consider ourselves an expert. It builds courage. A courage that helps us show up again and again and again. And our faith is one that calls us into courage, isn't it? Right now at the fellowship, we are in the middle of a Saturday morning series called Liberation Circles. It's a series where we are exploring anti-racism and decolonization. The series was born from a partnership with professional anti-racism educator and decolonization coach, Anjali Nath Upadhyay. Anjali and I met for months before our series started in order to create and build it together, specifically for our fellowship. I was able to bring my knowledge of Unitarian Universalism and of our fellowship community, and she was able to bring her expertise on decolonization and racial justice. At one point during our Zoom planning meetings, she looked at me and she said, "You know, Allie, I would really like you to take a big lead in facilitating these sessions when the time comes." I heard that and I froze. All of a sudden, I felt like I was back on stage holding my tuba. Who was I to facilitate an anti-racism workshop? I take classes like that, not facilitate them. Who was I to show up and try to make this kind of noise, especially when there was a professional right there, a professional anti-racism educator who I was sure would do a way better job? But my co-facilitator, Anjali, she shares a lot in common with Victor Wooten and his music education philosophy, especially this view about jamming with the professionals, that it is a great way for us to learn and to grow. She expressed to me that as someone who is so deeply invested in anti-racism and dismantling white supremacy and decolonization, she cares much more about nurturing others into this work rather than hearing her own voice do it herself. Just like music educators who care more about getting their students to love making music rather than having the notes played perfectly. Play now, and you'll want to practice later. We can show up and use our voices now, and then we can learn how to grow and use them in more effective and helpful ways as we go. We don't have to show up fully formed. Now, I stand by the belief that humility is vital Humility is a moral necessity. And I think I've always told myself that this impulse I have to step back and ask, well, who am I to do this? Whether I was holding a tuba or facilitating a class on anti-racism, I think I've always told myself that that impulse came from a place of humility. And some of it might, but calling it humility has also worked to mask a lot of fear. Oh, no, you couldn't possibly want me playing tuba in your ensemble. That was my way of saying, I'm afraid. Oh, no, you couldn't possibly want me facilitating this important class. That was my way of saying, I'm afraid. Oh, no, I wouldn't have anything of value to contribute to that committee. I'm afraid. Oh, no, as a white person, your group wouldn't want me involved in your activism. You all would do it so much better than I could ever. I'm afraid. It can be so hard to discern when our impulse to step back comes from humility and when it comes from fear. But our Unitarian Universalist faith requires us to do this discerning. Our faith and the big vision of love that we hold for the world requires us to carry both courage and humility, to use our voice and to hold a microphone to the voices of others, to be willing to make mistakes and to use those mistakes as learning, to show up and to be okay with being turned away when our presence in a space might be counterproductive, to lead and to let ourselves be led by those with more experience, to make some blessed noise and to do some sacred listening. I don't know about you, but I'm excited to see where this combination of courage and humility can continue to take us. May it be so, and amen.